Let's continue with the, well, we started last week a little bit, and I want to, last week we discussed the concept of the two yeshivas in Bavel. Today I want to discuss the relationship between the two yeshivas and the Reish Galusa, the exilarch, and what that relationship played itself out in the power struggle which perhaps existed. So we saw last week, I didn't finish this yet actually, that the two yeshivas which they had were both Sura and Pumbedisa. Sura in the south, Pumbedisa in the north. In a time span of 450 years, they had 50 Gaonim each. Around 50 Gaonim. That means the average rule of every Gaon, the Gaon was the head of the academy, of the yeshiva, was about 9 years. We asked why is that, and we explained, it's because, Alan, you have 50 over there in each one? Not quite. We don't know all of them. We know quite a number of them. But the reason why they were so short, because they were appointed when they were well beyond in their years. And the reason why that was, is because we saw there was all hierarchy. There was the Reish Mesifta. There was the Reish Galusa, which is the Exilarch. There was the Reish Chala, which is, right, Alan, we say by Yekum Purkan. Reishe Chala. What's a Reishe Chala? We said there were seven rows in front of the Rosh Yeshiva. And every row had 10 people. And on the first row, you had the seven Reishe Chala, head of rows. And each one was responsible for 10 Talmidim, including himself. 9 plus himself, which made up a mini Sanhedrin, or a Sanhedrin, of 70. So everything was a hierarchy. Meaning, if your son was Roy, he took your place in the rows in front of the Rosh Yeshiva. So therefore, they didn't just take somebody out of the blue. It was probably the next in line and the third in line. And therefore, it took time till they were appointed, end of their lives. Therefore, it was such a short time span, each going, each Rosh Yeshiva. We also showed that though in the academies, they learned it the whole year, but the two main months that everybody came and joined the academy were the Yarche Kala, the months of Kala, which is the month of Adar and the month of Elul. These were the 2 months at the end of the winter season, at the end of the summer season, when there was not much to do agriculturally, and they all came from all the area, whether you're in the north, you went to Pumbedisa, in the south, you went to Sura, and they all sat and learned over there. They actually learned the Masechta, which was told them the last Kala. In Adar, the Rosh Hashiva told them, in 5 months, the next 5 months, this is what we're going to learn. They all dispersed to their various hometowns, wherever they came from. They sat and learned over there. They probably had yeshivas over there. That chavrusas, even though they were working, they made sure that they learned. And when they came back after 5 months, that's when they discussed everything together. That's when Rosh Hashiva gave them shiurim. That's when he gave them fahers, etc., etc. Something else, which we didn't really see so much last time, but at that forum, there was a whole procedure that when questions were sent in, maybe there were questions sent in the whole year also, but clearly, from those areas where all these Talmidim joined in during the Yarche Kala, when they had a question, they sent it with their Talmud, because they knew that within a month, I'm going to get back the answer. With the result, they went on this Yarche Kala, besides the shiur which was given on the Masechta that they learned, or the topic which was discussed was the upcoming Yontif, many tshuvas, many shailas were answered. Shailas u'tshuvas. Hence, the first time we find shailas u'tshuvas. The first tshuvas we find is tshuvas ha'goinim. The Bahag wrote tshuvas, shiltas of ha'goin, which are tshuvas, shailas u'tshuvas. Tshuvas ha'goinim are the earliest known tshuvas that we have. How was that done? So look at number one on the sheet. This is a eyewitness testimony from Rav Nosson HaBavli. V'kach hoyim min hogom b'tshuvas ha'sheilois. B'chol yoyim ha'chodesh Adar, every day of the month of Adar, moitzi aleim kol ha'sheilois shigiu elof. So the Rosh Mesifta, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Goyin, would bring out to his Talmidim all the questions that were sent to him. And he gave them permission, they should give their own answer. They say, no, we can't answer in your presence. And he says, no, I insist. And they all discuss. And they all discuss it. And he gives them the points and he asks them, and it's a whole discussion. The last three lines in number one, until all the answers were given to the shilas which were sent to them this year from all the congregations in Israel throughout the land. Doesn't mean this year, it means this season. Twice a year this happens. Uvetachlis hachodesh, and at the end of the month, yikoru hatshuvas v'hashelos, they were read out loud the question with the answer, b'mamat kol hachaburo kulam, in front of everybody, because everybody decided on it, v'chosem aleihem rosh yeshiva. And the guy puts his signature to the bottom of the shuva, v'achakach shochin oisem lebaleihem. Then he sends the shilas back to the owners who asked the question, and that comes the key word, Ba'oz mechalek hamomoin aleihem. And then he divides the money. What money is he dividing? So we'll see from this eyewitness account that when you sent a shila to the goyin to be discussed in the yeshiva, you sent along a pidyon. You sent along some money. Because for the tircha, the Talmidim are discussing it, they also need to eat while they're there. They probably need to eat the whole year if they're Talmidim over there. So I send a little bit of money. Not bribery, but I send money along for the yeshiva. Tzedakah, please answer my shayla. And the Rosh Yeshiva, the Goyin, would get all this money and will see in detail where he got the money from. Was it from his jurisdiction? Was it from the Reish Galusa? Who paid the yeshiva in Sura? Who supported the yeshiva in Sura? Pumpadisa. And we'll see that the yeshivas mostly were self-supportive. Though they were under the maybe official title, tutelage, or not tutelage, of the official head, the Reish Galusa, the exilarch, might have been in charge in name, but when it came down to it, money-wise, they were very independent. And if you're independent money-wise, then gives you strength. You're not dependent on the exilarch. And we'll see that in detail. I have proofs, many, many proofs of that. But that's one thing that is unusual. It's unusual and it's brilliant. And that's why it lasted for 450 brilliant years. I don't know if that's brilliant. But it's brilliant that they were independent. The yeshivas, Sura and Pumbedisa, were more or less independent. We'll soon see the power of the exilarch, and perhaps the Rosh Yeshivas and the two yeshivas fell under his power as well. But the fact that they were self-supportive, for the most part, gave them, very, very important, gave them some separation, gave them some division of powers, gave them strength, and that's why they're able to subside. Now, it's not quite like that. We're going to see the interplay. Matter of fact, I'll tell you what we're going to do. I have over here in the next page, I have four sides of eyewitness accounts of what took place over there. If we read this together, and I'll point out different things, I'm telling you, you're going to get a good picture of what life was like. This is an eyewitness account. This was written in the year 950. 940, 950, Reb Nosna Bavli wrote this. What he saw when he came to Bavel to look.
What context did he write this?
As a history. That what the power of the Reish Galusa was, what the build-up was, how it was established, the yeshivas, the exilarch, and he describes it in detail. Fascinating. I'm telling you, we're going to get to it. Now, he described it as an eyewitness account. And it's fascinating, I'm telling you. I read it and I felt I was literally standing in Bavel at the crowning ceremony of the Reish Galusa. That's the flavor it gives you. But before we get to that... No, he's not a Gaon. Nosson Bavli was not a Gaon. Absolutely not. He was a regular person. Maybe he was a great person. But he wrote this down as an eyewitness account. Now, before we get to that, I just want to point out one more thing. You know what? Maybe we should leave the takana for afterwards. I got your appetite wet, so we'll leave the takana for afterwards. The number two, we'll leave for next time, perhaps. What else the Goyim did. But first I want to show a little bit the interplay between the Reish Galusa and the Goyim. So this is important to know. What is the Reish Galusa? So we had the two Russian yeshivas, right? We had the two Russian yeshivas, which was the academy in the south, Sura, the academy in the north, Pumbedisa. The head of the yeshiva was called the Gaon. He was the Reish Yeshiva, the Reish Mesifta, right? The head of the Mesifta in those academies. Now, besides that, there was an exilarch. An exilarch was the Reish Galusa. They were direct descendants of David HaMelech, of Yehoyachin, who came at the end of Bayis Rishon, right? The end of Bayis Rishon. They came, taken into Babel by Nebuchadnezzar. So their direct descendants always had special privileges. And the government, the Persian government, and afterwards the Sasanian government, first the Babylonian, and then the Persians, and then the Sasanians, and afterwards the Arabs, the Khalifim, the Caliph, and the Arab conquest. But they looked at them, this is representative of the Jewish king. They were the Reish Galusas, direct descendants of Yehoyachin, Melech Yehuda. Right? Fascinating. And they were and it was very different, because come to think of it, while they were in Israel, when the most of the Torah centers were in Israel, so the Sanhedrin was always revolved around the Nasi. The Nasi was a direct descendant of Hillel, who came from David HaMelech, but the Nasi, which was the power and the representative to the Roman government in Israel, the Nasi surrounded himself. He was the head of the Sanhedrin. So everything was by him. By Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, he was the Nasi. He had all the power. And at the same time, he was the Galador. He was the head of the Sanhedrin. Every Nasi, for the most part, I think everybody, was the head of the Sanhedrin, at least after Churban Bayesheni, Rabbi Gamliel de Yavne, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, all those were the heads of the Sanhedrin, and they were the Nasi. It was all concentrated. Babel was different. Babel, you had the Rosh Yeshiva with their own Sanhedrin, a Sanhedrin in Surah, a Sanhedrin in Pumbedisa. We said the 70 Reishei Chalah and the heads of the rows and the 70 Talmidim in front of them and then the rest, 2,000 Talmidim afterwards. But that was the Sanhedrin, the Mesifta, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Halachic Authority, Sanhedrin, and the Nasi was separate. The Nasi was in a different area, probably in the area of Narda, though I'm not convinced. I don't think it's necessarily true. It could be where he came from. But the Nasi, which was called the Reish Galusa, he was the king of the Jews, and he really had nothing to do with the Rosh Yeshivas of the Mesiftas. Now, he had a lot to do with them. He had his own Bezdin as well, and he had his own power. He had his own jurisdiction. We're going to see that the Babel was divided into three jurisdictions. The jurisdiction of Sura, the jurisdiction of Pumbedisa, and the jurisdiction of the Reish Galusa. And they all had power over their parts, but nevertheless, it was like division of power, three of them, but nevertheless, the Reish Galusa was somewhat above everybody else, because he was the official representative to the king. He was given all that honor and all that covet, and people looked at him as he's the leader of the Jews. So he wasn't necessarily the halachic authority. It was separated, but he still had somewhat power over the Goyim. So in a way, it was separation of powers, not unlike we have, you know, the executive branch, the legislative branch, so to speak, lahavdil. So you had the Malchus, the Nasi, the Reish Galusa, and you had the two Rosh Yeshivas. Each one had their own powers, but who was on top? So I think if you see the way it's described, the Reish Galusa, I think you get a pretty clear picture who was on top. Well, look at them, yes.
This was set up in
Nebuchadnezzar time, correct. But it didn't come into play until Surah and Pumbedisa. The reason being, because until the Torah centers moved to Babel, then the power was by the Reish Galusa. You had yeshivas, the others didn't have power. Until you had the Surah and the Pumbedisa, there was nobody really to compete. You had yeshivas, you had learning, the Sanhedrin was in Israel. So you had the Reish Galusa over here.
Even during the time of Amorim, the Reish Galusa's position was a political position. He collected taxes. He had a standing army. It was a powerful position.
Very powerful position.
Did it change during the Golden Age?
No, his position did not change.
Or because of what was going on politically, it had to change. He had to exert more influence.
I don't think that he became more powerful. I think the contrary. I think the Goinim also had a lot of power because they had such power in the yeshivas and they had a lot of money and they were also in charge of their own dayanim. They didn't have the army, correct? They were not the representative towards the government. They didn't have easy access to the melech, and we'll read that. We'll describe the Reish Galusa once didn't like in a certain province how they treated his son. He went right directly to the king of Persia, who spoke to the king of Babel, who spoke to the king of Persia, who spoke to the king of what's the name, and boom, they levied heavy taxes and went right back. He can do whatever he wants. That this Goyim did not have. Clearly they did not have that. But the Goyim had other power. They had the people by them, right? They had the yeshivas, though the Reish Galusa also had his dayanim that he appointed, and they were self-sufficient. So I think it became more of a division of powers in this time period as opposed to beforehand, because beforehand they weren't that powerful, the Rosh HaMasifta. Yeah, you had the Torah Academy and etc., but it wasn't, I don't think they had any money at all, right? Maybe they had, but it wasn't like an organized system whereby they were able to collect their own taxes. The yeshivas also collected taxes, believe it or not. I don't think it changed in that sense. I think both sides became more powerful. Until then, it was just the Reish Galusa who had his army. He was a representative, and that's it. I think the last 400-500 years in time of the Goyim became powerful because they had all this money. Whenever Shiloh was sent to them, it came with money. So they were self-sufficient. Yeah, so most times he actually was. Most times the Reish Galusa was from the top things. Not always, but most times he was. He was from the top echelons of society. And we'll soon see, you know, how he was treated, and we'll soon see what his powers were. For the most part, he had to be. Let's read it together. Alan, you ready? Number 5 on the sheet. What are you looking up?
I was just fascinated by the word exilarch.
Exilarch.
It's only unique to...
to Reish Galusa.
Latin.
What does it mean, exilarch?
Exile. Arch.
Oh, arch. So he's the one in the head of the exile.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
right, right. Reish Galusa, head of the exile.
Arch.
Okay.
Arch, exile.
So let's see number 5. But I don't know. Let's see. Maybe we can get a clear understanding. Let's see number 5.
Something really changed.
It changed from what sense? What was it before? Do we know what it was before?
Sure, we have. There's tons of Gemaras that they... everyone went to the Reish Galusa, and then it happened to Reish Galusa, Reish Galusa did this. We had the Reish Galusa all over the Gemara.
Correct, correct.
We know who the Reish Galusas were at any given time.
I think...
But something clearly changed, because...
You think it became more powerful or less powerful?
I don't know.
In time the Goyim.
I don't know.
I think the Goyim became more powerful. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Number 5.
I guess we'll find out as we question...
And by the way, every Reish Galusa is different. Sometimes Reish Galusa got involved, and he said, I don't like this Goyim, and they chucked his Goyim. One of the famous ones was Rav Achoy. He was in Sura for a year and a half. And the Reish Galusa, when we get to his time period in the year 750, Reish Galusa, I don't like this guy. Get rid of him. Banished him. The poor fellow had to run away to Etzol. What did he do in Etzol? He wrote the famous She'iltas de Rav Achoy Goyin, which we have till today. Shailas Achuas, Rav Achoy Goyin. The Netziv wrote a whole parish on the She'iltas de Rav Achoy Goyin. He's the Goyim that did not make it in Sura, was thrown out by the Reish Galusa, had to go to Israel, and 1,500 years later, 1,200 years later, we have his Shilas and Chuvis with the parish on the Shiltas of Achai Goyim, thrown out by the Reish Galusa. So sometimes they did get involved, many times they did not get involved. To me it looks that it were really, there was a good separation of powers.
What was their duty, their mission in Galus? Just to be the representative?
Whose mission?
The Reish Galusa.
The Reish Galusa, we'll see. He was able to collect taxes. He was able to appoint Dayanim on his area of jurisdiction.
The Jewish culture and lifestyle.
Yeah, but I don't think he had that. I don't think he had that power over the other two areas. It doesn't sound, if you read through it, I went through it very carefully. He did not have the power over Suras Dayanim. He did not have the power over Pumpadisas Dayanim. They had their own going.
Example
The only thing he had above the Goyim is he had a direct line to the king. He walked around like a king, and he had a direct line to the king. He was a representative of the Jewish people. So whenever he needed something globally or toward the outside, you had to go through the Reish Galusa. But the day-to-day running of the Jewish life, I think that was divided between the three different areas. That's what seems to be. We'll read it together. You tell me if I'm right.
In Israel, we have the chief rabbinate. And then you can say I'm totally off with this, the chief rabbinate. But who are really calling the shots of the Rosh Yeshiva?
That's because everybody belongs to a different. Each one doesn't. What's the name?
Each Masipta had 2,000 or plus Talmidim. I mean, the Reish Galusa. How many people did he have?
He also had. He didn't have the big Masipta, but he had. I don't think he might have had a Bezdin.
He exerted a lot of influence because he probably had a lot of money.
But that's not true either. Oh, we're going to see that. Let's read it together. Okay. Believe me, we'll get it clear. Let's see what it says. Number five. Let's first see how he describes it. Let's read it together. Umasha Amoid Reb Nosson HaKoyin. What Reb Nosson HaKoyin described, Al Divrei Reish Galus, Heich Yismane. How was he appointed? V'heich Yichesu Leikolam Bris, V'shosh Yismane. How did the whole pay homage to this Reish Galusa? So he said like this, Im Hiski Mudasa Kolam Anoisai, if the people agreed to appoint him, V'skapzim Shnei Rosh HaYeshivas, Im B'nei Yeshivasam. So firstly, the Reish Galusa does not get appointed unless everybody pays homage to him. The Rosh Yeshiva of Surah has to come up from Surah. The Rosh Yeshiva of Pumbedisa has to come down from Pumbedisa. With all the Talmidim, Im Kol Rosh HaKol V'askenim, who they go to, Alan? Where are they going to have the initial greeting ceremony?
An invocation?
Not yet invocation. Before that, Beveis Adam Gadol Shebebovel Migdoyle Hadar. Has to be a chash of a person's home. Who are you going to choose? Right? Whether a wealthy person or a chash of a person. That's where everybody gathers together. Vizesh Mikapfim Avesoi, and the one that everybody gathers in his home, Miskabed Bedovo, he gets honored. Yesha Shvach Gadol, Kvoidim Misatzem, he gets even more powerful, etc., etc. Fine. Then they have a pre-ceremony. Umiskapzin Bevesa Knesses, B'yayma Chamishi. They all gathered in Shul in the Reish Galusa's town, I suppose. On Thursday, and they bless the Reish Galusa, and they both bless him. And they blow in the shofar. Fine. And then, there's always a collation. So they have a nice big meal on Thursday, on Friday, machel, mishte, megadim, cakes, all types of sweets. Fine. When is the ceremony? Very important. When is the invocation? When is the Hachtara ceremony taking place? On Shabbos. They have a Tfilah Chagigit. You know what is Tfilah Chagigit? Yeah. You know, when they install the new chief rabbi, they install the new Reish Galusa, it's on Shabbos. They decorate the shul in a special way, they build a special platform, they hire a special chazan, they get a special choir. That's what it describes, what it says. Amazing. Ukishamashkim Laleches Yom Shabbos Bebeis HaKnesses, and they wake up early for Shabbos to go to shul. Rabbi Migdoyle Adkol, all the great rabbis come. Miskatzim Laleches Bebeis HaKnesses. They gather around him. They walk him to shul. Ukvachinu Bebeis HaKnesses Bayom Migdal Eitz. They have a big platform, 6 amas long and 3 amas wide, and they put beautiful silk, you know, like the Sfarim do. Beautiful silk cloth on top of it. You don't see any of the wood. The whole thing is covered up with silk and beautiful. V'nichnasim tachtov, and they bring in bachurim, boys, shenifchu v'nisi ha'gdol migdoleihem, bachurim v'tikim ba'alei koil, beautiful voices, a special choir, u'ba'alei ni'ilom, ni'imo, v'koilam orev, beautiful voices, u'bekiin b'tfilah, they know how to daven. You get the mezamrim, you get the beautiful choir, that's what you make achtara. What do you think they do? They have somebody who goes on a knee and puts a sword on him? Of course not. How do you install a new Reish Galusa? In shul, on Shabbos, with a beautiful tefillah and a beautiful davening, and that's what you do. And then the Reish Galus, Atzmo Yemechuse Bokam, Im Rosh HaYeshivas. Okay, Then he starts. See where I wrote tefillah? Look how they davened. The chazan akneses and the chazan maschil the baruch shomar. Marty, where did you start from? Baruch shomar haydu. Maschil baruch shomar. He starts from baruch shomar. V'abuchurim oinim achav al kol dovo v'dovo. V'baruch shomar baruchu. Ukshayim mizmashil yem shabbos. Oinim achav toiv loydes l'ashem. They sing psukin zimra out loud. V'koyrim kolom keechot psukin zimra. And they all sing psukin zimra together. Well, but they didn't. They just mentions the main points. Psukah Zimra, Mizmashilim Shabbos, Baruch Shomar. They finish Psukah Zimra. Va'oimid the Chazan. The Chazan stands. Upesech, and he starts. Nishmas Kol Chai. V'bachurin Oin Nachov. And the boys in the choir answer after him. Tvarech Eshimcha Hashem Elokeinu. It becomes a whole davening. And then they answer back. So they get to Kedusha. What's Kedusha? By Kriya Shema, Kadosh, Kadosh, Baruch Kvoit, V'efanim, V'chayetz HaKodesh. Anyway, they daven. After they finish Shacharis, before they get to Kriya Satera, then they're both sitting on a platform. The Rosh Galusa, the new future to be, Rosh Galusa stands up there. Now read what it says, the last three lines. The Yotza Rosh Hashiva Surah Achrov, V'yeshev Al HaMigdol. Then the Rosh Hashiva of Surah comes after him, sits on the platform. He first bends down to him. Who bends to who? The Rosh Yeshiva of Surah. He's the first one that pays homage to the Rosh Galusa.
Kriya
bends down to him. Right? Kurim. Like what's it called? A curtsy. He curtsies to the Rosh Galusa. Then comes Achikach Yaitze Rosh Hashivas Pumbedisa. Vitin Gamukriya Vieshalis Moiloi. And then the Rosh Hashiva Pumbedisa pays homage and curtsy to who? To the Rosh Galusa. Sometimes Rosh Galusa is an Amaret. But they have to understand. You're the Rosh Hashiva, but this is the Rosh Galusa.
Respect the position.
You have to respect the position. Now,
that's interesting.
Surah
comes first.
Surah always came first, at least in his time. It's a whole debate, actually, amongst the historians. Was it always that Surah was greater just in his time? It's not really clear. Some say it was always Surah. Others say not like. Some say Rav Haigern says not like that because he came from Pumbedisa, but really it was like that. A whole big debate amongst the scholars. Not really clear. But at least in the 900s, Surah came first, and they first gave homage. But it's fascinating when we read it now together in the next page, even though they gave homage, but it wasn't all the way. We'll see. They gave homage, and they respected the position, but on the other hand, these were the two Goinim. You don't just, you're not going to make them secondary, not even to the Reish Galusa. And we're going to see how that plays out. Look to the next page, page 84, number one. So you said, yes. I know. Because Rav was in Surah before Rav Yehuda made Pumbedisa great. Correct. Because Rav was greater than Shmuel. Correct. Now, okay, let's move on a little bit. Then as they're sitting on the podium, after they paid homage, so line number three, Chazan HaKnesses Machnis Roshe B'Sadinoi, the Chazan of the Shul puts his head in his garment, maybe that's his talus, B'Fnei HaMigdol, U'mavorach Oysa B'Brochas Mutukonos Sheskinu Leim Esmo Shilshayim B'Kol Namuch. They gave him a special bracha. They made a special bracha for the occasion that he blessed him with. Now look what happens in number 6. Turn to line number 6. So after, this is before Kriyas HaTorah. Before Kriyas HaTorah, after Shacharis, they pay homage. U'peseach reish golus v'doyresh b'inyin ha'parsha shel oisayayim. He gives a drasha. He gives his first drasha. How do you install and invocate a Rosh Galusa? You make the whole ceremony in shul, shachris, tefillah chagigit, with the choir, and he's got to give a drasha. Now, line 7, maybe he's not, doesn't feel comfortable giving a drasha. He's a young guy, and he has the old Rosh Hashiva. Oyitein reshus l'Rosh Hashiva surah liftoyach v'lidroish. Where he gives permission, he says, you know what, I don't want to give the drasha. Even though I'm being installed, I want to relate the Rosh Hashiva of surah to give the drasha instead. Now, Rosh Hashiva Surah, Naisim Shus, Rosh Hashiva Pumbedisa. Again, first they go to Surah, then they give Rosh Hashiva Pumbedisa. Fine. Now look at number 9. Ukrishadoiresh, whoever speaks gives the drasha, whether it's the Reish Galusa or the Rosh Hashiva, so Doiresh be'ema, he talks, you know, with fear. B'soisem es enov, he closes his eyes. U'misatev betalisoi, and he covers his face with a talis. Achu mechachas pedachtoi, his forehead is covered. Line number 10. V'lo yeh bekol, and nobody in the crowd dares. B'shal shu Doiresh, when the Rosh Hashiva is giving a drasha. Line number 10. Shepoitze peh. Nobody dares talks when the Rosh Hashiva or the Reish Galusa gives a speech. Ukishiyagish, and when the Rosh Hashiva closes his eyes, he feels senses. Somebody's talking. He opens his eyes. In other words, and everybody's petrified. I think I should try that. He's a drusha with the eyes closed, and somebody's talking. Opens up and looks at the guy. And everybody's petrified. You wouldn't dare talk. You wouldn't dare open your mouth when the Rosh Hashiva or the Reish Galus even spoke. Okay. Then, Ukishugaymer, line number 12, Maschel Bebaya, he asked a question, they discuss it, and somebody gives an answer, Vachazan Oymer Kaddish. And then they say, Kaddish the Rabbanon. So it's like similar to us. They have a davening, Psukin Zimra with the choir, Shmona Esra, after Shachris, before Kriyas HaTorah, they give a drasha, and then they say Kaddish, the Rabbanon. Now listen what happened by the Kaddish Rabbanon, Lam 9, line number 13, Ukish Magia, when they get to B'chayeichon uv'yameichon, by the way, this is written 1,000 years ago, so if you ever want to know about the authenticity or the age of Kaddish,
I thought the Gaon wrote Kaddish.
Yeah, well this is 1,000 years ago, and it was clear, was there already, Ukshemagia, when he gets to Bechayechoin uveyamechoin, they say, Oimei says, Bechaye nisienu roish golus. They throw in Bechayechoin in our life, uveyamechoin, uvechaye in the life of the new roish golusa. May he be blessed. They change Kaddish to put in Bechayechoin uveyamechoin, uvechaye nisienu roish golus. Wow, never heard of that one before. Fine. Then after they finish the Kaddish, the Rosh Galus, they give a bracha to him, and then they give a bracha to the Rosh Yeshivas. Fine. What's the name? Next, line number 17. V'achakach moitzi sefer Torah. Then they take out the sefer Torah. The koyre koyin, they first call up the koyin, v'achav Levi. Then, look what happens then. Chazan HaKnesses moirit sefer Torah l'Rosh Galus. They don't call up the Reish Galusa, but they bring the Sefer Torah to the Reish Galusa. Wow. Never heard of that before. Usually, I don't care who you are, right? It says, by the way, it says they do a similar ceremony when they appoint a new Goyim, new Rosh Hashiva. When they appoint a new Rosh Hashiva, they call him up and he gets called to the Aliyah for the Sefer Torah. Here, it's not like that. Here, Kohen, Levi, and by Shlishi, they call the Reish Galusa, but they bring the Sefer Torah to the Reish Galusa. They bring the Sefer Torah to him. Fascinating. Now, then he gets the Sefer Torah, and he reads, and they all stand next to him, the Rosh Yeshivas, right? Now look what he says. The Meturgamin is Rosh Yeshiva of Surah, etc., etc. Now, look at number 20. After the Reish Galusa, they gave him Shlishi, V'achav Koirin Rosh Kalois, the Rosh Tamid HaChachamim, V'achem Tamid Rosh Yeshivas. Read number 21. Aber Rosh Yeshivas Atzmon, Einam Koirim Sefer Torah Boisayim, Mibnei Shekodmon Acher. What does that mean? That means that I would think, after you call the Reish Galusa for Shlishi, you should call the Reish Tzura for Ravi, the Reish Bon Budisa for Chamishi. You can't do that. It's embarrassing to the Rosh Yeshiva that he's being called after the Reish Galusa. We're not going to do that. The Reish Galusa got Shlishi, we don't call the Rosh Yeshivas. The Goyim don't get an Aliyah. Better not to get Aliyah than to get Aliyah after the Reish Galusa. So you see that yes, they paid homage to him and they paid homage to the institution and they curtsied to him, but they wouldn't give an Aliyah to the Rosh Yeshiva after the Reish Galusa. No, they didn't give him anything. That's really embarrassing. So it looks like they kept their own, meaning Yes, they pay homage to him, but they're not necessarily inferior to him. And they always, you see that throughout the thing, there was always this balance that they tried to accomplish. Now, by the way, look at number 22. Ukesha maftir, who they call for maftir? Hamaftir oimid adam gadol v'ashir. Ah, the wealthy man gets maftir. Maftir is the chashav aliyah, he gets to read haftarah. That's fantastic. Fine. Then they give all the brachas, etc., etc., and that's the end of the ceremony in shul on Shabbos. Now listen to this: Ukeshayitze Reish Galus, when the new Reish Galuser walks out of shul, so everybody follows him. Line 26: Yitzin lefonda v'lachov v'im lefonda divreshirayitz sishbachos, and they until he gets to his house and they sing him in song and dance. Aval Rashi Yeshivas again, einam holchem imoy ad beisai. The Rosh Hashivas, they take leave of him. Who the Rosh Hashivas? The Rosh Surah and the Rosh Pumbedisa, they take leave of him at the shul. Okay, thank you. Wonderful. We wish him goodbye, wish him well, and he goes surrounded by the whole crowd, but not by the Rosh Yeshivas. Again, you see that they kept their own covets, meaning the Rosh Hashiva Surah and Rosh Hashiva Pumbedisa, they pay homage, they don't want to be completely subservient to the Reish Galusa. That's what I pull out of this story. And then they say that they go to his house, they stay there for 7 days, there's a grand party for 7 days. Remember, the Reish Galusa has this huge property, and he has gardens, and he has servants, and all the people that come for the initiation ceremony, they stay in the house of the Reish Galusa for the next 7 days. And then it says that from this point on, the Reish Galusa doesn't leave the house. He doesn't go anywhere. He doesn't go to shul ever again. You know why? Because he has a shul in his palace. That's where he davens in the week. That's where he davens on Shabbos. Reish Galusa doesn't have to go out to the shul with the hoi polloi. He stays in his palace. They all come to him, and he davens over there. Then he says, if he needs to go and do something, he has to go tour around. Look at number 929. Hey, by the way, number line 28. Umoise eis ve'elach, einene yoitze mi pesach beisoi, v'am miskapsim umispalan imoi. Tomit, Be'emachol, Be'em Shabbos, Be'em Tovim. They daven in his palace. He has his own minion. He doesn't have to go with everybody else. Im roitze lotzeis, belasai strachov, if he has to go out, roichev, b'mekeves ha-mishne, he goes in a special golden chariot, b'mekeves sori ha-melech, b'godim noim, he goes in beautiful clothing like a king. V'ochem achov ad tezvav ha-noshim, 15 people run in front of him. He has a special royal guard, and he has servants that run in front of him. And then if he passes by any Jewish purpose, they all crowd around him, you know, like crowd around the king, they crowd around the carriage. And that's how he goes out. Line 2 in page 85, Ula Elam Enoi, and sometimes you have 50 or 60 people following him. Line 2 in page 85, Ula Elam Enoi Yotze Atshoch Nachov Kol Siyotai. He never leaves anywhere until he has the full royal guard following him. Now, he's like one of the ministers of the king. He's like the second in command to the Persian king, the Khalif, the Babylonian king, whoever king he's serving, he's the second in command. And then on line number 3 says, if he wants to go and speak to the king, right, the ruler of the country, make me an appointment. And then he goes in and he gives, and it describes in detail, and I'll find out because I have to leave, but it describes in detail how he comes to the king bearing gifts. And this he knows very well. Because don't forget, he comes from a long lineage of royal shtadlonim, right? For generations, they know how to speak to the kings. They know how to butter up the kings. They know how to get what they need for the klal, for klal Yisrael. So look at number 11. And the king asks him how he's doing. And he speaks to him. He asks the king, line 12, let me speak in front of you. Then he starts. First he praises the king tremendously. And he speaks about all his lineage and how the families have been so close all these years. until the Persian king gives him what he wants. V'noisen le'sheilasai, v'koisen le'kachafetze, shvakir menu, v'yatim sham, v'nifte menu, b'simchu v'shalim. So you see why the exilarch was needed, because he was the direct line that the Jewish people had to the king. And that's probably why they gave him all this covet. Not because he was more powerful, but you see, they gave him the covet, but not completely. I mean, they weren't, the two Russia yeshivas, they weren't really subservient to the Reish Galusa, and they didn't want to make it appear that they were subservient. And therefore, they always had this balance, the way it looks to me, they always had the balance on the way they conducted themselves towards him, but on the other hand, they're still the Russia yeshivas and the Goyim. Next week, we'll discuss where he got his money from, the Reish Galus, where his, what his jurisdiction entailed, where he got his power from, and then we're going to see what the power of the Russia yeshivas were, and we'll see that it was not necessarily dependent on the Reish Galusa. Of course, they were dependent to some degree, because if he wants, and we'll see that also, he can just go to the king, and they can make tzaras for any province that doesn't listen to him. But on the other hand, they weren't directly, it was more an indirect dependent, and therefore they honored the institution. It wasn't a direct dependent. So I think it was very much a division of powers, the Reish Galusa, with the Rosh Yeshivas of Surah Bumbadisa. That's my initial understanding.
They got the money from the king. No.